Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we mark the passing of the great John Prine.
I hope when he gets to heaven, he's going to shake God's hand, then get a guitar and play in a rock and roll band. All right, Patrick, this is really upsetting me. We have to stop recording episodes like this, but we have yet another significant passing in the world of music, and that would be John Prine, who died of coronavirus. We knew for some time that he had been in failing health because of this disease, and we just got news that he finally had passed, and I think this is a really big one, right?
I'll tell you this. John Prine survived mouth cancer, jaw cancer. He also survived lung cancer. So I was pretty sure he was going to beat this, but he didn't. But I will say this. I have a positive vision always in life. I could see Adam Schlesinger. I can see John Prine. And I can see, obviously, somebody that we talked about just the other day.
Is that Bill Withers?
Jamming, right? Wouldn't that be a good jam?
Yeah, absolutely.
But, I was really sad about Bill Withers, really sad about Adam Schlesinger, but I have to say, not so much for me, John Prine. You know why? Because if I live 1/8 of the full life that he lived and the songs he wrote, I would be so thankful to pass on to the next dimension, mans, because he really, really lived all those characters and all that life that he wrote about.
And I will say, too, he was someone who always wrote about themes like mortality. Right.
That's right.
I mean,
he couldn't get away from it.
He had a real grasp, I think, because of some of his own issues, but also having been in the army when he was young, growing up from Vietnam War, you know, that whole era. I think it was something that I think people of his generation, he's a little bit older than us, I think really, you know, had to come to terms with earlier in life than we did. Right.
Absolutely.
Probably largely
Jim.
Because of Vietnam. Right.
And he also was a mailman. And,
right,
I mean, talk about taking a snapshot of everyday life.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
So, okay, we're going to get into all of that. We're going to hear some listener comments. This is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And rest in power, John Prine. Okay, so before you and I talk about John Prine, why don't we hear one of the calls, okay? We got like 4 calls from listeners. We got some other comments. I'm just going to go ahead and play the first call we got is from Ben Montgomery.
Hey, guys. Ben Montgomery here. Wanted to add my 2 cents on the John Prine appreciation. I will admit that I was a latecomer to the John Prine admiration team, but one thing that I can credit to the creation of my own podcast is that my guests are way smarter than I am. I think you guys say something similar to the effect of your listeners are way smarter than you all. And I will say that I've been turned on to some really great artists because of our guests. And there are artists that maybe I knew, but just didn't really appreciate. And it wasn't until last year that one of our guests, the singer-songwriter Michael MacArthur, he chose Prine's Tree of Forgiveness as his record choice. And I knew Prine, knew Angel of Montgomery, of course. I love Bonnie Raitt's version. And I knew the In Spite of Ourselves song, but that was mostly because I liked Iris DeMent back in the early 2000s. But it was Tree of Forgiveness that really caused me to do a deep dive on Prine. And it was kind of interesting just a couple months later, after we did that episode, I was dealing with the loss of my dad, and I went back to the Tree of Forgiveness quite frequently. That album is full of life lessons. A lot of conversation about the afterlife. Just listen to Summer's End or When I Get to Heaven, and you'll see the great songwriting from Prine. that kind of caused me to go back and do a lot of other listens of Prine. Souvenirs is a fantastic record by him. And he's just a great lyricist. Case in point, if you listen to Lake Marie, he just kind of throws out these little witty things. For instance, one of the lines is, "We found ourselves in Canada trying to save our marriage and perhaps catch a fish." That kind of summed up John Prine and his great wit, and definitely is going to be greatly missed. Anyways, for those of you who don't know John Prine, go give a listen. It's well worth your time. Thanks, guys.
Many years later, I found myself talking to this girl who was standing there with her back turned to Lake Marie. The wind was blowing, especially through her hair. There was 4 Italian sausages cooking on the outdoor grill, and they was sizzling. Many years later, we found ourselves in Canada trying to save our marriage and perhaps catch a few fish. But whatever came first, that night she fell asleep in my arms, humming the tune to Louie Louie. Oh, baby, we gotta go now. We were standing by peaceful waters, standing by peaceful waters.
All right, thank you to Ben Montgomery. Ben has a podcast called Records Revisited, which is what he was talking about.
Yep.
Tree of Forgiveness was John Prine's last album that came out in 2018 to much acclaim. It was his first album in several years, I think. And I think people were really happy that he was, you know, continuing to just put out the same kind of John Prine wit and charm and quality of compositions even later in life, right?
Yeah, and I think that's well said, Jim. And also, you know, Ben pointed out that, you know, Angela Montgomery perhaps it wasn't done by him in the most famous version. I mean, John Prine was a songwriter at his heart, like Dylan. You know, many times been covered, but also had recorded his own versions of songs. And I was on the internet today for a bit, and I saw Springsteen, Bruce Springsteen, that is, you know, said, you know, me and John Prine were the new Dylans back in 71. So, you know, they both were, very articulate, right? Very creative with melodies, both huge, fans of all kinds of music. And, you know, it's great when somebody like Ben, who has a podcast, feels moved enough to call us and leave that message. So thank you, Ben.
Yeah, great stuff. So you mentioned John Prine was admired by Springsteen, admired by Dylan. Apparently Dylan called him his favorite contemporary songwriter.
Yeah, that's right.
So think about that for a second. I also read that Roger Waters was a huge fan. So, you know, somebody who does, at least in my mind, kind of a completely different kind of music, still, you know, really can appreciate what John Prine was doing. You know, I think he was an artist in the sense that he wasn't well known in the mainstream, really. Even at his death, you know, you would tell people, "Hey, John Prine died," and they'd be like, "Who is that?" And then you kind of have to go through a whole thing of little history of who he was, and maybe they heard a song here or there. Never really had a big hit, never got necessarily a lot of radio airplay, but as you mentioned, was covered by other people and was one of those artists who I think everyone who was a music fan, once they encountered John Prine's music, they were really swept up by it and had to get more of it and had to really listen to it, I think, intently. And I think he brought a real intelligence combined with a real warmth to his music that I think you you couldn't help but sort of be charmed by, but yet also stimulated by, challenged by a little bit as well.
Yeah, and I think warmth is a great adjective to describe his music, Jim. He was so human and, you know, so relatable. I mean, everything he wrote about, somebody felt very deeply. And,
yeah.
And I think that's why it touched so many people across so many genres. And, you know, just one example, Jim, you know, his fantastic appearance in one of my favorite music videos of recent times, Dan Arabeck's Waiting on a Song, when he's the old guy that buys liquor for the kids.
Yeah.
You know? That's another great example of how human he was and how relatable and how real. Like, you always know a guy going in a liquor store and maybe he'll help you out, you know, because he was there at one time in his life.
That's right. It's great in that video. And he co-wrote that song with Dan Auerbach. So
it's
really
such a great song.
And I had the great fortune to see John Prine on his last tour. And so it's been like, it was the fall. I looked this up. It was like November of 2017. So like 2.5 years ago.
Yep.
But Dan Auerbach opened for him. So that was really cool. He's also been on tour in recent years with like Margot Price and stuff like that. So he definitely, again, was very admired by the artists who are sort of coming up today as well.
Totally, Jim. And I wonder if you could dial up from 1978, Bruised Orange. And I know everyone has a favorite Prine song. I'd like to get mine in early. I love the first track on this record. It's called Fish and Whistle, and I'd love to hear a little bit of it right now.
I've been thinking lately about the people I meet, the car wash on the corner and the hole in the street, the way my ankles hurt with shoes on my feet, and I'm wondering if I'm gonna see tomorrow. Father, forgive us for what we must do. You forgive us, we'll forgive you. We'll forgive each other till we both turn blue, then we'll whistle and go fishing in heaven. I was in the army, but I never dug a trench. Used to bust my knuckles on a monkey wrench. I go to town and drink, give the girls a pinch, but I don't think they ever even notice me. Father, forgive us for what we must do. You forgive us, we'll forgive you. We'll forgive each other till we both turn blue. Then we'll whistle and go fishing in heaven. Fish and whistle, a whistle and fish. Eat everything that they put on your dish. And when we get through,
lovely song, Jim, that describes humanity and everything you could possibly want out of a really honest person who put his feelings down. So,
yeah, so many songs. The other thing I love about John Prine's music is like you listen to one album, and be like, that was really great. And then there's like how many more, you know, and you can just keep going deeper and deeper. Right.
Yeah, and I, you know, like Fish and Whistle, you know, I love Bruised Orange. That's my favorite John Prine album, and I love that everyone has a favorite song, you know. Everybody relates to something he observed.
Let's play another call, and then we'll talk a little bit more.
Great.
Hey, Mr. Jim and Mr. Patrick. It's Marios from Pittsburgh. Saw the tweet about John Prine. It's just been a dark day over here for all of us, appropriately. It stormed all night here. Power got knocked out. My 2-year-old was screaming with his nightlight out, just kind of howling at a pink moon, at a full moon. And it just seemed oddly appropriate for the night John Prine left us. I guess just my personal story about John Prine was that I was a late bloomer to him. I was a Dylan fanatic. Like everybody who, you know, is obsessed with Dylan, I obsess over every word, you know, he says in interviews, everything he does. And there was that 2009 interview I think he did with, like, Huffington Post or something, which is funny. And he mentioned John Prine and mentioned him being this, like, pure, I think he said he was pure Proustian existentialism. And I was like, who's this guy? You know, I knew who Gordon Lightfoot was. I knew who some of the other names that Dylan was dropping, but I didn't know John Prine, and looked him up immediately, probably based on the timing, probably like stole some of his music from BitTorrent. So sorry, the recording industry can come after me, I guess, now. But I don't know what the statute of limitations is there. But and I had suddenly realized that I had had his music around me my whole life. You know, that those songs were so kind of ingrained in our culture that I knew some of them. And I had heard covers. But the first one I heard was Blue Umbrella. And I remember like just being – it's such a simple song, such a simple melody. And just when you think he sings the hook, he drops another hook in there. And that line, just give me one extra season so I can figure out the other four. I just remember being like, who is this guy? What's his deal? And, you know, that first record, just blown away, just heart-wrenching songs. My grandmother passed away from Alzheimer's. So Hello in There really hit me. It's just, it truly feels like we all lost a good friend. You know, he was really a musician's musician. He was a music fan's musician. Just so grateful for the time we had with him and grateful for those songs that we'll have forever. And they'll live forever. I know I'll be playing them forever. So as long as I'm here, my kids will be singing them. So, you know, thank you, John Prine. So happy I got to see him live, and thank you guys for doing this. Hang in there. I know this is just the craziest time, but we're going to get through it together, and we're going to get through it with the humor and the lightheartedness that, that John Prine brought to everything. So thanks. Cheers to you both. Hang in there.
Well, feelings are strange, especially when they come true. And I have a feeling that you'd be leaving soon. So I tried to rearrange all my emotions, but it seems the same no matter what I do. Blue umbrella rests upon my shoulder, hide the pain while the rain makes up my mind. Well, my feet are wet from thinking this thing over, and it's been so long since I felt the warm sunshine. Just give me one good reason, and I promise I won't ask you anymore. Just give me one extra season so I can figure out the other four.
All right, there you go. That's Blue Umbrella from 1973's Sweet Revenge, which has a great album cover art on it,
yeah,
by the way.
It's probably the best album cover art, you know, that you can ever have, Jim. And that was extremely eloquent by Mario, so I really appreciate that. Yeah. Our listeners are smarter than we are.
Yeah.
And I love his expression that Prine is ingrained in the culture. I think that's right. You know, he's a lot deeper than we realize.
Yeah, and, even if you don't know it.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And again, just so happy that he was with us and so happy that he had such a great run. And I think we should celebrate him as much as we
can. So I was thinking today about why is it that John Prine, you know, didn't become a household name? Why is he sort of a cult artist in a lot of ways? And I think it's because he wasn't country enough to be country. He was a little too late to be in on the like folk movement that happened, right? He didn't play like radio friendly, you know, rock and roll or pop music or anything like that.
Nope.
He just sort of like was being John Prine, and
that's right.
And he was too early for Americana, you know, and that
totally.
Stuff that came on.
Yeah.
I mean, so you know, he was just doing his thing, and it didn't necessarily fit in with any movement that was happening, with any, you know, anything really going on in the culture, popularly. But the people, you know, who knew, they knew, you know what I mean? And yeah. I think he was okay with that too.
Yeah, totally. And I agree with you, Jim. That's well said. You know, he wasn't part of any movement, so he didn't care about them. And, you know, he has an album called Pink Cadillac, that was recorded at Sam Phillips Recording Studio, yep. Jim, where you and I were.
Yep.
You know, it's like a rockabilly album, or, you know, right. with some different touches. Like, he didn't care. You know, he always did what he felt was the right thing to do. And, you know, we salute him for that.
Yeah, totally. All right. We have three more calls, so let's get to another one real quick.
Hey, Jim and Patrick. This is Craig Rosenkohn. Saw your message about John Prine. And not a huge fan. I really, you know, of course I heard the name, but I wasn't really familiar with his music too much. I know, like, well, I like covered some of his songs and, you know, so on. But recently, I wrote about, this guy, Swamp Dog, who's sort of like this R&B soul cult artist, and he happens to live down my street for real, which is kind of a weird thing, but anyway, he is a huge John Prine fan, and he actually worked at Atlantic when Prine was signed, and he really fell in love with that song, Sam Stone, and he covered it. He recorded it and does it live, and I think he even did it live, or I know he did it live a few years back at some festival in the Minnesota area with Jeff Tweedy. I think it was a John Prine Festival deal, and Bon Iver played on it as well. And since Swamp and John were old friends, or at least old acquaintances, John Prine is on the new Swamp Dog album. He's on a couple songs that, you know, are just great songs anyway, but now they're even more poignant. I'm looking here in my iTunes so I can give you the correct titles of the songs, but you should definitely check them out. The name of the album is Sorry You Couldn't Make It, and the two songs with John on them are a song called Memories, which is really a wonderful kind of a little ditty, and then the final song the album closes with, Please Let Me Go Round Again, which really, you know, will hit you hard if you listen to that. You know, it's basically two guys pleading for their, two elder statesmen of music pleading for their lives to go on. And unfortunately, John is no longer with us. Pulled out the Rhino, I think it's a double CD anthology, and also his latest CD that I'm going to give a listen to this afternoon as I work. Rest in power, John Prine. Take care, guys. Bye.
Please let me go round again. Oh, life, can't you afford me another chance? If you let me go round again, I'll build a better mousetrap from a far more better plan. Everything I put my hands on, I blew it. Women, jobs, money, friends, and I knew it. Acting crazy, talking dumb all the time. I woke up yesterday, I was 40 years old, life had passed me by. Please let me go around again. Oh, life, can you afford me another chance? If you let me go around again, I'll build a better mousetrap from a far more better plan. I got children that don't even know me, and that's not fair. I got children right here at home, and they don't.
All right, that's the Swamp Dog song with John Prine. Please Let Me Go Round Again, then. That's really touching stuff.
Ah, super beautiful, Jim. I mean, myself as the father of 19 children, I know that things can get out of hand. And John Prine and Swamp Dog know how that feels.
Yeah.
So,
you know, one thing I want to mention.
I mean, I couldn't improve on what Craig said. That was gorgeous.
Yeah. One thing I want to mention here, you mentioned early on this episode the bouts with cancer that John Prine had. And at one point, he had a tumor removed that in his neck, I believe, and that like that actually changed his voice.
That's so right.
That early
took
John
part of his jaw.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So the early John Prine records you'll hear have a little bit more of a kind of a nasally sound to his voice.
They do.
And then after that incident, that surgery, he became a little bit like a deeper voice, a little bit more of a growl. But yet it didn't really matter, like, because what he was, it still sounded so from the heart that you didn't even really care.
Right. Totally. And what are your thoughts, Jim, on his late career renaissance? Because he really had a, you know, was embraced by a lot of people and the public and the Grammy Awards and a lot of people, you know, later on. I mean, I think people were like, gosh, I feel bad that I miss such brilliance for so many years.
I think it was really exciting to see. Like I said, I went to that show a couple of years ago and I was like super excited to be there. And he seemed really in great spirits and was really sort of entertaining the crowd, you know, and here was a guy who you knew had been in it a long time and, you know, appreciated where he was. And so, you know, it was exciting to see. And, he got a Lifetime Achievement Grammy this year. And, I don't think he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but he certainly is someone who, you know, as we mentioned, has received a lot of acclaim and appreciation from a lot of corners, and probably the right corners that matter, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, when I think about it, Jim, I mean, we all have to understand, especially during this time, life is precious. It's short. You know, we're only here for a little while, you know, and do it like John Prine did, you know, live it, express it and feel it and soak up every moment. You never know what's around the next corner. And when you listen to Prine, you get that sense, you know, he felt everybody's life and it, you know, it's a rare thing.
Okay. I've got a long call here. Are you ready for this? This looks like it's a two-parter.
Sweet.
Hey, Jim and Patrick, it's Randall Brown calling in to give some thoughts on John Prine after his passing here so suddenly. I've been a fan for many, many years. Halfway almost sort of met him, but I didn't really meet him. Before I'd heard anything of his songs, I by strange chance was at Farm Aid 2 in Austin, Texas in 1986, and he was in the press tent, and I had, again, strangely had access to the press tent, and I'd heard of him from like Cream magazine or Spin magazine. Something had called Suzanne Vega a new John Prine, and I almost worked up the nerve to ask him what he thought of such a thing, but I didn't, and I really wished I'd embarrassed myself and done it anyway. But now I know that everybody called him a new Bob Dylan, so he might have got a laugh out of that question. Saw him later. He came to Knoxville a couple of times on a tour with Arlo Guthrie, which was kind of odd looking back. Different areas of Americana folk in a way, but the two of them were both great storytellers, so when you saw them back-to-back in concert, it really made sense. And as my mother always said, she enjoyed their stories between songs as much as the songs, maybe more. But he'd come around Knoxville pretty regularly. You got to see him a lot of times at some of our great theaters here. And also got to see him at Bonnaroo one year, 2005. And it was I was over there as a roadie with my friend's band, so we were roaming around backstage, and my big memory there was there was a PR person from Prine's company, one of the PR companies there, who was running around keeping people from taking photos. It was a very thorough young woman who was just running through the crowd near the stage saying, "No photos, please. No photos." And I ran into her later at the Bonnaroo and I said, "Hey, what was up with the no photos? Is it because his kids were up there with him? Because his younger, then young children were with him." And she said, "Well, yeah, that," and he just had his surgery and stuff. So he wasn't keen on having his photo taken back then, but obviously since then, he said, "Screw it and take my picture anytime." But as I'm talking on the phone here, leaving a big old long message, I'm waving around my live album from 88, John Prine Live, which was something I really wore out. Hey, it's Randall again, continuing. So I used to wear out the 88 John Prine Live and the Rhino Records Great Days album. If you want to start with John Prine somewhere, those two collections are superb. The live one includes a lot of his stories, some of his best song intros, the explanation behind Happy Enchilada, if you hear a Prine fan refer to that. And then Great Days had his early stuff, like the best of his early stuff, distilled to the very, very best. After that, I think his album, his last album, Tree of Forgiveness, was definitely one of his best. And the one from the early 2000s, Fair and Square, I think it was called, had some great stuff on there. Right when I was first really getting into him, the album German Afternoons was out, and it had classics like Lulu Walls and My Linda's Gone to Mars and Speed of the Sound of Loneliness. Those are some Prine classics. But, of course, a lot of the Suburbs folks have been talking about his first album on Facebook posts, and a lot of other people have been talking about just what a stellar first album that was. And to think that some of his legendary songs he first, like, rolled out at an open mic in Chicago way back when. So I could go on and on because I love John Prine, and I think his songs have – I was telling some friends today, I said, I think his influence inspires how I describe things even, like just in rambling conversations like this. But a lot of love for John. Very sad to see him go. But he leaves such a legacy of thoughtfulness in his music. It's like he was getting anybody ready for his own passing or anyone who you care about's passing. Just so many songs, such as the last song in his last album, When I Get to Heaven. It's just a beautiful sentiment. So I sense the phone beep coming up to cut me off of this message, so I'm going to cut myself off. But hope you guys are having a good stay-at-home time. I'm going to spend maybe my day off this Friday catching up on the last 2 weeks rocking the suburbs that I haven't been able to get to. Love you guys. See you later.
All right. Thanks, Randall.
Oh, that was beautiful, Randall. You know, and I think what Randall said, Jim, is so eloquent. Obviously, an artist he felt really deeply, but John Prine totally felt his own mortality, I think, at a lot of times during life.
Yeah,
and for a lot of us, that's a hard thing to do. So if you can do that honestly, then you really get somewhere that most people are not, you know, there with you.
And this is another thing I wonder about looking back now at his career is he was young. I mean, he was young. He was like in his early 20s when he was doing these open mic nights in Chicago and was discovered, and he wrote like these really like songs that seemed wiser than his years.
Hell yeah. But he was an old soul. Yeah, for sure.
Totally. But I've met so many people who say, I didn't get into John Prine until later in life, or I only recently discovered him in the last few years. And actually, I'm one of those people. I didn't really, as a younger person, I had no real interest in music like this. I think there's something to, maybe you have to have lived a bit to really appreciate what he was writing about. And one thing I'll say too, we talked a little bit about his wit and humor. There's moments when you listen to songs that they could become too jokey, but they never quite do. They never. No. They always sort of like manage to stay on the right side of that line.
That's
you know what I mean?
Never pulls the punchline. Yeah, he always stays honest and real about it. Yeah,
pretty great. Okay, one more call I want to play here, and then we can wrap this up.
Hey guys, it's Scott Parks from Valparaiso, Indiana. Saw the shout out to Colin for some crying tributes. It's a hard one. you know, I've not been a long time fan. I actually only discovered him 2 years ago with Tree of Forgiveness. But tell you what, it feels like I've known him and known his music for my entire life. His lyrics, his music, it just does that to you. It kind of gets into your soul and makes its home there and makes you feel like he's your friend. Huh. So, I don't know. It's been a hard day, hard night last night, and I'm glad I got to see him last October. Just gonna miss any new music that he was hopefully going to release, and just do my best to continue to spread his music to everyone that I know. He was a special man, special artist, and I don't know. I've never been affected like this by the passing of a musical artist. So, I don't know. That's about all I got. Sorry for the tears. It's just been a pretty emotional 18, 20 hours or so. So, hope you guys are doing well. Everybody out there in Suburbs Podland, stay safe. Keep your family safe. And I'll talk to you later. Bye.
All right, there you go. Thanks, Scott, for the call. And I think, I think that sums it up. I think he speaks for a lot of people. There was I like the part there where he said he felt like your friend. And I think that's important to his music, too. Differentiated himself from a guy like Dylan, who, you know, was a bit, you know, kind of prickly, right?
And totally, Jim.
And but you always got the sense with John Prine, like, that he could just be like hanging out with you or singing to you from like across the room when you listen to his music, you know?
Totally. And thank you, Scott, for that call. And I think you're right, Jim. I think that's so well said. You know, Dylan wouldn't be the guy that you could go to and say, hey, I have this problem or I felt this emotion. You know, he wouldn't necessarily relate to you. But if you went to Prine and said, oh, man, you know, he would absolutely know what you were talking about and sympathize with you. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm just going to mention real quick. There's so many songs. You know, just go and dive into this catalog because you're not going to be disappointed. There's so much incredible material here. But I always really liked Spanish Pipe Dream. That was one of my favorite ones. Of course, I love Paradise and my time spent living in Kentucky that has, you know, a certain, you know, hits me in a certain way, even though I was in Louisville, not at coal mining country like that.
Totally,
but, you knew what drove that state and what that meant, you know. And there's a line in there about sort of it being in they call it progress, or it's in the name of human progress or something like that. And it's really, it cuts pretty deep. But I think if I had to pick one song that I consider to be just like a perfect song, and this is actually on, I have a playlist on Spotify of, you know, perfect pop songs, right? And this is on there, even though it's not what people would consider necessarily to be a pop song so much, but it's, but in the sense of popular music, this to me is just a perfect song, and it's Sam Stone. And I don't think anybody would disagree with that. And that's on his first album, right? I mean, it's right there. Yeah. It's written with such heart and such, I think, a sense of knowledge of people who have been in those circumstances. And I think it's the kind of song that could really only be written at that time in the early 70s and really captured the pain that a lot of people were feeling with Vietnam. And the struggles that happened to, you know, after people returned home, right? And it was, you know, in many ways that was more of the pain of the war than anything, you know. And I when you hear that, and when you get, I mean, there's so many great lines. There's a stuff part about, you know, the kids run around wearing other people's clothes and stuff like that. I mean, there's so much like little details in that song that just make it an amazing song. But of course, the thing that just kills you is, you know, the couplet of "there's a hole in daddy's arm where all the money goes." And then he says, "Jesus Christ died for nothing, I suppose." I mean,
right,
dude, who writes lines like that?
Well, when you write something that early in your career, man, you better be in it for the long haul. And I think that's well said, Jim. It's the template for the honesty and the and the sympathetic eye he had for every man and our struggle and our mortality. So well said, Jim. It's a great song.
It really is. So let's close out with that. So rest in power, John Prine.
Rest in power, John, and I hope you're up there jamming with Adam Schlesinger. I can't wait to hear what you guys would make. It would be a great song.
It would certainly be witty, I'm sure.
Oh, hell yeah. It'd be smarter than anything anyone down here could come up with.
That's right. For sure. Okay, it's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Sam Stone came home to his wife and family after serving in conflict overseas, and the time that he served had shattered all his nerves and left a little shrapnel in his knees. But the morphine eased the pain, and the grass grew around his brain and gave him all the confidence he lacked. With a purple heart and a monkey on his back, there's a hole in daddy's arm where all the money goes. Jesus Christ died for nothing, I suppose. Little pitchers have big ears, don't stop to count the years. Sweet songs never last too long on broken radios.
Pure Proustian existentialism.